The next matter is In Re Interest of Orlando. Again, our next matter is In Re Interest of Orlando. Yes.
May it please the court. My name is Natalie Killian, and I'm a Deputy Douglas County Attorney, appearing on behalf of the State of Nebraska, the appellate in this matter. I would respectfully like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal. The state's request in this matter is this, that this court reverse the findings of the separate juvenile court of Douglas County, that the state failed to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the minor child came within the meaning of Nebraska Revised Statute 43-292, subsection 6, and that the state failed to prove by clear and convincing evidence that it was in the minor child's best interest for the parental rights of his mother to be terminated.
The court did find sufficient grounds under two other subsections, though, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. Subsections 2 and 7.
And of course, that's not challenged.
Correct.
And so let's just get right to best interest then, which I understand does kind of bring in subsection 6 and everything else.
Correct.
Just curious, maybe to start off the discussion, you know, we have a fairly lengthy time that this child's been out of the mother's home, except for a period of reunification that was brief. You know, some things in the plan that mom didn't follow, some things in the plan mom did follow. The court seemed to be troubled by the fact that not much happened to assist this mother after the application, the second application to terminate parental rights was filed. Is that a fair characterization of what troubled the court here, or what do you think was the driving force behind the denial of the termination?
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't believe that the Department of Health and Human Services, or Nebraska Families Collaborative, as it was known at the time, failed to provide services to the mother after the second application for, the second motion for the termination of parental rights was made. At that time, there was a time around that time period where she was incarcerated, and of course, the services ended at that, ceased to be implemented during that time period, mm-hmm. Partially at her own request. She requested not to visit with her child while she was incarcerated. Mm-hmm. But post-incarceration, one of the family permanency specialists had attempted to, he gave her four therapeutic agencies that could provide drug treatment programs that were recommended by the co-occurring evaluation that she had while she was incarcerated. So he gave her these four agencies. She did not give him any names as to, or any information as to how she had set up those services. And in fact, it wasn't until 3 months after she was incarcerated that she did reach out to one of these agencies to set up a drug treatment program. Furthermore, she had visitation services that were in place. She was post-filing of the termination, the second termination of parental rights. She was unsuccessfully discharged from visitation services because in the months between September and October of 2017, she had canceled or rescheduled for 9 different visits and had been very inconsistent with those. And so due to that, she was unsuccessfully discharged. She also was enrolled in drug treatment programs, testing facilities through Owens and Associates. Prior to the trial for the termination of parental rights, she informed the caseworker that she would no longer be testing for urinalysis, testing that she did not feel she needed to do that any longer in violation of a valid court order. So she was offered services even after the filing of the second termination of parental rights. However, even after that filing, she still failed to correct the conditions that brought her child into care, namely that she had a substance abuse problem, and that problem has persisted throughout the pendency of this case.
But so the juvenile court judge says that the more recent caseworker admitted that he did not follow up to confirm the mother's assertions that she was unable to locate appropriate treatment that could be started before the termination hearing. And the court said this failure by the caseworker to do so is concerning. You disagree with the court's assessment there?
I disagree primarily because of the length of time that this mother has had to avail herself of any services. The child had been in care at the time of the trial for the termination of parental rights. The child had been in out-of-home placement for 39 months, minus 1 month that he was placed with the mother.
But does that mean that as this case progresses towards a termination hearing, the caseworkers can just stop putting in any effort?
I don't believe that they, in this case, that they stopped putting in any effort. I do know that in November, she did not reach out to these agencies until around November of 2017. And at that time, I don't believe any agencies would pick up that referral due to the pending termination of parental rights trial.
But didn't the caseworker himself say the delay was not her fault?
I believe, from my recollection, she had been in, she was released from incarceration in August, but that there was a delay of 3 months and that she hadn't reached out to them during those 3 months between August and November of 2017. I know that in the appellee's brief, they mentioned that there were concerns that the state was using the FPS workers as proxies for best interest, and at this time the state would like to address that issue. Each of the caseworkers, through their testimony, indicated that they had received training as to best interests of a minor child when they're under the temporary custody of the Department of Health and Human Services. This includes the length of time that a child is in out-of-home care, whether a parent is participating in court-ordered services, whether the parent can provide safety and permanency for the child. And so in this sense, they are experts in that specific realm. They are experts in what is a best interest for a minor child in these circumstances.
But the court does not need to accept that testimony, right?
The court can weigh that and, of course, can choose to accept or reject their qualifications. But in this case, each of the caseworkers, in this case, were qualified experts as to best interests, and that they, each of them agreed that due to the length of time that this child has been in care, due to the fact that the initial reason for this child coming into care has persisted and has not been rectified, that it is in the best interest for this child's rights, or the child to be freed up for adoption through the termination of parental rights. So in this sense, they are not proxies for best interest. Rather, they are experts in their own right due to their training and their experience and their expertise. Furthermore, the appellee in her brief mentioned that the child's therapist did not offer any best interest testimony. And that is correct. She did not say the word specifically, best interest. However, she did testify to what the child needs. And in that case, this is the child needs consistency, structure, positivity, a nurturing home environment, and that all of these were being met in his current foster placement. She also said that the minor child had behavioral issues that, due to his mother's inconsistent contact with him, were exacerbated, and that when the child actually had no contact with his mother, his behavior evened out, and that he was that it essentially improved drastically when he had more consistent lack of contact with his mother. So it's that inconsistency that was troublesome to that therapist. So while she didn't use the word best interest specifically, she did testify to what the child needs and how his mother has not been meeting those needs and how his current placement is meeting those needs.
The juvenile court judge seemed concerned about the removal, the state terminated the initial motion, the state dismissed the initial motion to terminate in January of 2017. There were unsupervised visits granted by February of 17, and then by April she was given placement. And then in May that was taken away because of the marijuana thing where she said it was brownies with weed in it at work or whatever. But the court seemed concerned that instead of removing the child at that point, why didn't NFC craft a safety plan, that there was no evidence that there was an immediate threat to the child at that time?
So there were two positive tests for marijuana. The first, there was a safety plan that was prepared surrounding that first positive test, and that would include no more further positive tests for any illegal substances. And I think at that time the court was concerned about this, that there wasn't an immediate need for removal due to the fact that there were some cloudy circumstances surrounding this positive drug test. But then 3 weeks later, she tested positive for marijuana again, as well as for cocaine. And at that point, she had, in a sense, violated the safety plan, and the child was removed due to an exigent circumstance that this mother was continuing to use, and that she has had multiple relapses throughout the pendency of this case. Earlier, she had relapsed on PCP, and so she has these drug issues that have not been addressed, even in the 39 months between when the child was brought into care and the trial for the termination of parental rights. And I see that I am almost out of time, so if you have any other questions. Thank you. Take care.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Jamie Cooper, and I'm an attorney with Johnson & Pecky Law Offices in Omaha, Nebraska. And I'm the attorney for the mother in this case, Ms. Davis. I'm here today to ask the Court to affirm the ruling from the trial court, and that the state failed to show by clear and convincing evidence that it was in the minor child's best interest to terminate his parent's parental rights.
I'm going to start with a very broad question like I did with your opposing counsel. What do you think was the driving force here in the juvenile court judge's decision to give mom another chance here?
I think there was two issues. One was the immediate removal after the child was placed back in April and was at home for a month. I think that there could have been other services put in place to prevent the immediate removal. As we all know, in juvenile courts, removing a child from the parent is very detrimental to their emotional health, and it impacts them in various ways, and I think that there's other ways that we could have addressed the substance abuse issue at that time, reassessing that safety plan. The other issue, I believe, is after, once the termination was filed, I understand my client was incarcerated at that time. It was filed in July. She left jail in August. That there just seemed to be kind of that she felt, and I think that we were able to establish, it's like they just gave up on her, that the reasonable efforts that were ordered in the court were not being provided to her. The testimony of one of the caseworkers was that there was a delay. Immediately after she was released from incarceration, she got a job, she got a house, and she asked to engage in services. The reason she couldn't engage in services is because she needed a co-occurring evaluation. He admitted himself that there was a 20-day delay, and she couldn't get into that evaluation until October. Termination was in December.
But Ms. Killian says that...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Ms. Killian said there was a 3-month period there that she didn't even start seeking that treatment. August to November, she said, 2017.
I'm not sure if that's accurate. I know the testimony of the caseworker was that she engaged in services immediately after she was released from incarceration.
What were the services that she engaged in?
Visits. I know that there was a delay in the visitation.
Okay. So there was visits.
She had
drug testing, was that?
Drug testing.
Okay.
There was visits, drug testing.
Did she take any efforts, make any efforts on her own to get moving with the evaluations and treatment as far as the drug treatment?
I don't believe prior to the co-occurring evaluation. I know after the co-occurring evaluation, I don't know what efforts she made. I know that she was trying to get into therapy and was
so she had the co-occurring evaluation in October.
October.
And then the trial was in November. So
December.
Or December.
Correct.
So what did she do between the evaluation in October and the trial in December?
She reached out. So the caseworker gave her 4 names of people who could provide services. She reached out to those 4 people. They said they could not get her in until after the termination trial. And it's my understanding that, and even that the testimony of the caseworker, that he didn't follow up on those 4 names, that he kind of took her word for that. The other thing that she tried to do during this period of time was she asked to engage in different service that had not been court-ordered, such as Better Together or some type of residential treatment. And I think if you look at the history of the case, that's when she does better. At the beginning of the case, there were some slip-ups, and then she did a 30-day residential treatment, successful. After that residential treatment, she did IOP, was successful again. It wasn't until several months later when she...
How do you define success?
She successfully completed the program.
She completed the program, and then she reused again.
Correct.
So is that successful?
Well, I think there was a relapse several months later.
Is that successful? I mean, I see this pattern of treatment, successful release, use.
Right.
Treatment, successful release, use. And some of the treatments were unsuccessful by definition.
Correct.
Tell me where the success is in this thing over 3 years.
There were periods of when she was sober. There was an extended. So there was a period of time where she, after she completed the treatment program, the inpatient, and then she did the IOP, she had several months where there was no positive drug test. Yes, she slipped up. She immediately went back into treatment after that. She wasn't court-ordered to do it. She did it voluntarily. She went back in and got an evaluation because she wants to kick this addiction. She testified herself. She knows that she has a problem and she wants to kick this. After she went back, did that evaluation, there was a period of, I believe, 7 months, and that's during the period of time that the child was placed back in the home. There was that positive UA for marijuana safety plan, and there was a positive UA, I believe it was for cocaine. Immediately after that, she was incarcerated. I think the fact that she continued to try to get treatment, she never once refused services. She never once said, I'm not doing this evaluation, I'm not going to treatment. I know at the beginning she was unsuccessfully discharged twice, but the treatment facilities.
Okay, so what was different at the time of trial that would tell this judge that if I give her another chance and I send her back to treatment again, that we're going to get a different result than we've gotten for 3 years prior?
I think it was her motivation to seek treatment, her asking for
You just told me she was motivated through the whole thing.
Right, but she was asking for a treatment that was not court-ordered. At the time of the trial, she was asking for some type of residential treatment, some place where she could live and have the counseling services and have the services for her children as well. So she asked for a Better Together, some type of treatment facility like that. She had not asked for that before. I believe the fact that, and I know the word success is an issue at this place, but the fact that she, when she did some type of residential treatment before, that's when she had the longer periods of sobriety, she knew what she had to do. And so when she's asking for these services and the caseworker does not want to help her find it or does not check up to help her find other therapeutic services that are court-ordered at that time, when the court's looking at what's motivating her this time, I believe she knows her time is running up as well.
And the trial court, you know, in its lengthy order, did struggle with this and noted very, several times noted the concerning circumstances regarding mother, but nevertheless felt it would appropriate to give her another chance.
Sure. And I would also point out, I know the trial court mentioned in his order that there was UA testing that was ordered. There was a number of UA tests that were missed. There was a number that was taken. But throughout this case, there was not a consistent positive UA throughout this case showing consistent use. I know that there's questions about missed tests and what the court will perceive of that, but there wasn't, she wasn't positive for PCP or marijuana or cocaine consistently throughout this case.
The only positives were for some prescription, oxycodone and hydrocodone or things like that, right?
I think the other big matter in this case, I think that, absent any reasonable alternative, that's when termination is appropriate. And in this case, we have these reasonable alternatives, maybe a Better Together, another treatment facility program that she's asking for. I think we also have to look at, the law doesn't require perfection of the parent, but it looks at the parent's continued involvement in parenting and beneficial relationship with the child. I don't think anybody can deny that this parent had an amazing relationship with her child. The caseworkers that testified at the best interest, the ones that did see her with her child, established that they had a bond. I think at the beginning of the case there were some parenting issues, but that was quickly resolved. The therapist that testified at the trial also testified that when they were in the same room, he would light up, he was happy to see his mother. I think what was a really important part of this case was the testimony of the foster parent. So that's the person who sees this child day in and day out. Not only did my client continue to do visits after she was released from incarceration, even when visits weren't set up because of additional delays, she went to the wrestling matches, she went to the house, she called numbers of times, and at the time of the termination, I don't believe that any of the witnesses testified that there was a safety risk or that there wasn't a bond between the parties or the mother and the child. I think that's really important. This child was 7 years old at the time of termination. He had a relationship. He knows who his mom is. He sees her regularly. And one of the things that she was consistent with throughout the minus the period of time that she was incarcerated throughout the case was she was consistent with visits.
3 years is a long time for her to get it figured out, and she got lucky on this one. And
right.
I don't, no decision here at this point, but
And Your Honor,
it's very rare that you see mm-hmm. the juvenile court allow a case to go on this long.
And I wouldn't deny that this is a close call, and I would point the case to my brief in the Henry Giovanna case, where the child didn't return home at all during that case, but the parents did engage in services. The dad did have visits, and he worked on some issues. He worked on a number of issues, but there he still lacked in some of the services. And the case said this is a very close call, but we don't find it's in the best interest to terminate the right. This child has a bond with his father. I think this case is very analogous in that she has some work to do. And the court said essentially you can have a little bit more time, but we're watching you. Mm-hmm. And because of the relationship that she has with her child, I believe it's in the best interest to give her a little bit more time. I understand 39 months is a long time. We do have this child in a foster placement where he is able to have regular communication with his mom. So, it's not a stranger foster home where he doesn't see his mom outside of the visits that are set up by the court. With that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Ms. Killian, have any time? All right, thank you both very much. The matter is submitted and you're excused.